Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Emotional Overeating Podcast, where you can become the next overcomer. And I'm here today with a valued individual in my profession, and I have, you know, long wanted to speak further with her. Dr. Anita Johnston is a PhD, a psychologist, storyteller, and an author of an amazing book called Eating in the Light of the Moon, How Women Can Transform Their Relationships with Food Through Myth, Metaphor, and Storytelling, which has actually been published in 6 languages. Interestingly enough, just a few years into my private practice was when I first picked up this book, and I just read it again the other day before doing this interview, and it's still tried and true, which is amazing. Anita has also been working in the field of eating difficulties and body image distress for over 35 years, and she's currently the clinical director of iPono Hawaii, which has a residential treatment program in Maui and outpatient eating disorder programs in Honolulu. She's also the executive director of eating disorder programs for the Integrative Life Center in Nashville. She's the co-creator of the Light of the Moon Cafe, an interactive online women's circle, book club, or workbook for eating in the light of the moon. Dr. Johnston provides virtual individual consultations and conducts workshops around the world. She's best known for integrating metaphor and storytelling into her training as a clinical psychologist to explain the complex issues that underlie struggles with eating, exercise, and body image. And this, in fact, is why I really wanted to interview you, Anita, for this podcast. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. I'm excited about our time together.
Me too. Very excited. And what I said is true. I read your book way back in the beginning of, it must have been in private practice about 5 years or so, and was still really, you know, delving into everything new. And your book came out, and I read it, and it's an amazing book. And as I said, it still stands tried and true today. What is your understanding about what causes emotional overeating?
Well, I think there is a clue in the word emotion, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people think, well, I eat for emotional reasons, but the way I see it is, it's not the emotions themselves, it's the attempt to not feel the emotions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with our culture that doesn't even understand the nature of emotions. We keep saying, well, I got to control my feelings, and the truth is, they can't be controlled. They're waves of energy, and they're designed to flow, and they're designed to flow through us. And so one of the functions of eating difficulties is an attempt to try to stop that flow, because the feelings may seem too painful, too scary, too overwhelming, or whatever. And so we throw food at it, or we restrict our food, or we run from our food in an attempt to not feel the feelings, because we don't understand that they're like waves in the ocean. They come in, they peak, and they pass. And then they'll come back, they'll come in and peak and pass, but they're just feelings flowing through.
Absolutely. I do think that's a key point. And most people don't recognize the emotional component of overeating and the underlying issues that go with that piece. It is exactly what you said. It's not necessarily that the emotion is the problem. It's that we're trying to distract from it, avoid it, stuff it, you know, somehow not feel it. And it's a whole lot easier to focus our energy on the food than on the emotion.
Right, because at least we know what to do, we think we know what to do, and that's one of the things that happens with dieting, for example. It's like, okay, I just won't eat, you know, and then that's like, I won't feel, and then what happens is our biology is such that then after a period of time, we're just going to eat everything we can get our hands on. And then the same thing happens with our emotions. They just come rushing out and we go, see, I knew I can't control my feelings. And I end up saying these things or doing these things. And we go back to trying to restrict again, restrict our emotions, restrict our food. And so then you're off to the races and running with this pattern.
Absolutely. It's so true. And I love that you're speaking about that, because I think so often people don't recognize, you know, that we're actually hijacked by our biology if we restrict mm-hmm. for too long, mm-hmm. or we try and mm-hmm. stay away from specific foods for too long, and we know them for too long, that we'll be hijacked by our amygdala and our biology.
And by our inner rebel, right? Mm-hmm. We all have that inner rebel that doesn't like to be told what to do. And I happen to think that that's our best part, because that's a part of us that keeps us unique mm-hmm. and doesn't just allow us to follow like a lemming off the cliff. However, she can get really activated when being told that there's certain forbidden foods or foods that you shouldn't have. So a lot of times our inner rebel, she needs a job, right? And her job is to really, you know, make sure that we are our authentic self, not just who others want us to be or who we think others want us to be.
Exactly. You're so right on. You know, in all the work that I do with the doctors that I train and the therapists I train, dietitians that I train, and I'll say things, you know, if people have to have a certain kind of food restriction for a certain period of time, someone with diabetes or someone with hyperlipidemia, you know, somebody with some specific disease state, rather than saying, you know, you can never eat these foods again, I'm constantly telling the people that I work with is it's just a not for now thing. You know, it's not forever. It's just a not for now. Because what we want to do is work hand in hand, right, with our she-wolf. We want to work hand in hand with that inner rebel, as opposed to coming up to battle with it.
Mm-hmm. And also to focus on what you can eat,
yeah.
You know, to recognize that it's not all about limitation.
Right. Absolutely. And I know in your work, you work so much with metaphors. Can you tell us mm-hmm. how you use metaphors to help someone recover from emotional eating and how they can be helpful?
Yeah, because I think what we don't realize is our imagination is our superpower. And once we learn how to use it in service of what we want, it's pretty extraordinary. And a lot of people will say, well, I don't have a good imagination. And I say, what do you think worry is? Right? Mm-hmm. Worry is a bad use of a good imagination. So often I will have someone engage their imagination using the language of metaphor. And so, for example, imagine that you have two tanks. Tank A and tank B. And tank A is the tank you fill when you need physical nourishment and you fill it with food. Well, mm-hmm. tank B is the tank you fill when you need emotional or spiritual nourishment and you fill it with things like attention, affection, appreciation, meditation, prayer, and so on. But what happens is we get confused and we think there's just one tank. So before we know it, tank A is full and overflowing, but we're still hungry. And so, because we think it's the same tank, and no amount of food will ever, ever fill tank B. So the task is then you have to tease the two tanks apart. And the way you do that is through interoceptive awareness. And that is really tuning in instead of tuning out. Tuning into your physical and emotional state as sensations. So that's where intuitive eating comes in, for example, where you learn the physical sensations in your body that tell you when you're hungry and when you are full. And they are actual physical sensations. They're things like contractions or expansion, or heaviness, lightness, roughness, smoothness, hollowness, density, coolness, warmth, and so on. I feel like pizza is not a physical sensation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of the process is really learning how to read your hunger and satiety signals. But that's not where it ends. And so let's say you learned it. You know exactly what the physical sensation is for hunger and where in your body you feel it. It could be a tickle or a movement of some sort or a heaviness or a tension or a tightness. But you know it, and you know what the sensation is that says you were full. So you're reaching for that pizza, mm-hmm. and you check in. Not a hunger signal in sight. Mm-hmm. But you still want that pizza. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You just tumbled down Alice in Wonderland's rabbit hole and landed smack dab in Tank B. Mm. And in Tank B, pizza's not pizza. Food isn't food. Mm-hmm. What is it? It's a concrete physical symbol of another kind of hunger that you're experiencing and may not even know that you're having it. So then, now you change the questions you ask yourself. Instead of looking for a physical sensation in your body, you ask yourself, what's the feeling I'm trying not to feel? Mm-hmm. Am I still ticked off at the jerk who cut me off on the freeway? Am I worried about an upcoming parent-teacher meeting? Am I annoyed at something my husband said? Am I worried about a comment my boss made? You do a scan of your day. But I'm here to tell you that more often than not, when you ask yourself, what's the feeling I'm trying not to feel, the answer is going to be, I don't know. I feel fine. Everything's okay, right? Because it's unconscious, which means it's out of your awareness. And here's where the metaphor comes in, because this is where it gets really cool. The food that you are struggling with will tell you what that other hunger is. Because it's talking to you, but it's talking to you in code. Mm-hmm. And in order to get the message, you have to crack the code. Mm-hmm. And so I'll tell you how to do that. I'll tell you and your listeners how to do that.
Right.
So, and again, we're all unique individuals. So it varies for each of us, but this is a good place to start. And sweet foods usually have to do with either feeling like you're not sweet enough or there's not enough sweetness in your life. Crunchy, salty foods are typically connected with unexpressed anger and frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Warm foods, usually with a craving for emotional warmth.
Mm-hmm.
Spicy foods, either a fear or a craving for, is often related to a desire or a fear of excitement, stimulation, and change.
Mm-hmm.
And chocolate, we know this from Valentine's Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sensuality, romance, sexuality. And if any of your listeners would like, I have a free PDF that they could download if they just went to lightofthemooncafe.com/OEE for overcoming emotional eating. And so that way you don't have to write this down.
Right.
So I can give you an idea of this is how it works. I had a client and she was struggling with bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, okay, if there were one food that you wished you could eat, and there'd be absolutely no consequences whatsoever, what would that food be? And she said, vanilla ice cream with strawberries on top. And I said, okay, I want you to imagine I've never had vanilla ice cream with strawberries on top, and you're going to tell me what's so fantastic about it. And she said, it's sweet, it's smooth, and it's refreshing. Mm-hmm. And when we took a look at what was going on in her life that was troublesome to her,
mm-hmm.
her boyfriend was accusing her of not being sweet enough.
Mm.
She'd hit a really rough patch with her parents and was desperately wanting things to smooth out.
Mm.
And she was in a dead-end job in need of a refreshing change. So the idea was that this food was trying to tell her something about what the real issues are. And sometimes it's even in the language of the food. So I had another client, she was an emergency room physician, and she came in one day and she went, oh my God, I'm so upset with myself. I can't even believe what I did. And I said, wow, what'd you do? She goes, I got off of work and I fixed some chicken tenders for myself and my husband, and I ate them all before he even got home. I can't even believe what I did. And she continued to start to beat herself up.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, whoa, can we wait a minute? Let's go back. So let's see, you just got out of the ER tending to all kinds of physical and emotional trauma, right? And she went, yeah. So I said, what do you think you were really hungry for? And we'd worked together for some time, and she said, a hug. I said, yeah, you wanted some TLC, some tender loving care, and instead you ate the chicken tenders. Now, because this was the truth of what her real hunger was, she laughed because it gets funny when you can find it through the metaphor. Now, she'll never be able to have chicken tenders again when she's not hungry. If she's hungry, chicken tenders are just chicken tenders. But if she's not, she knows to go, okay, where am I needing some TLC? Well, that's how it works. When you're able to find the metaphor, it pops it. It pops it into conscious awareness. And then it takes the power away from it.
Absolutely. It, cool. It makes it become, yeah, it's the language of the food.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
As opposed to it being about the food, right? It's not about the pizza or the chicken tenders, right? It's about
right. So there's a part of you that's trying to get your attention. And of course, it knows you very well. So it says, well, we know what she'll pay attention to. Let's do food. So there it is.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so true. So many of us, you know, obviously in the profession, we look at those things, but I find for so many clients, and I know you've had thousands of clients over the course of your career, you know, that so many people don't look at that. They're not looking at kind of cracking the language of their food code, so to speak. What does it really mean to them?
Because they think there's something wrong with them. And so they start to follow that. And then what happens is the food becomes a red herring. So a red herring is, it's a term used like in a whodunit mystery. Who killed the old lady? Is it the maid, the butler, or the chauffeur? And everyone's watching the maid because she's kind of strange. She's a little unusual. But at the end of the story, there's a twist. And it was the butler who nobody suspected because everyone was watching the maid. So the maid is the red herring. It's the distracting element. And the food itself, if you just get into, you know, counting calories and fat grams and all of that, and focus on that, you're going to miss the real culprit. There are other kinds of hungers that are trying to get your attention so that they can be fed. But remember, no amount of food will ever fill tank B. And the red herring just takes you further and further away from it the more you focus on it.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you can't fill your emotional tank or tank B with your physiology or your physicality, right? It just can't. It can't jump from one tank to the other.
It's apples and oranges, to use the food metaphor.
That's right. Exactly. You say recovery from emotional overeating is a path to greater consciousness, which I love and I believe. But can you explain more about what you mean by that?
Yes, because once you can get the idea that there's meaning in what you're doing with food, and you can then start to address that, it's going to take you where you need to go in terms of your own self-awareness. And developing a greater sense of consciousness about all of that. And so you start to see that if you can zoom the lens way out, and let's say you have a tendency of restricting your food. Well, that's the only thing you're restricting in your life. Once you start to see this pattern of restriction, maybe you restrict intimacy, or you restrict your emotions, or you restrict new experiences, or you restrict your sexuality. Or you're always putting yourself on restriction when you make a mistake. Mm-hmm. So you'll see there's this theme of restriction. And if somebody is yo-yo dieting or binging and purging, what you're going to see is a pattern of taking in and taking on too much and then having to get rid of it. So it's not just, you know, with food, but it's like with relationships. You meet someone, you fall madly in love, and then There's a little glitch. You go, okay, I'm over it. Or you sign up for gazillion classes and then get overwhelmed and drop out of school, or you meet somebody who becomes a super good friend overnight and then you discover a flaw and you end the relationship, or you start a ton of projects and then get overwhelmed and drop them all. So that pattern of taking in too much too fast, faster than you can assimilate, and then just having to get rid of it. That permeates life. And if someone is struggling with binge eating or compulsive overeating, it's not that there's just not enough food, but like there's never enough time or never enough money or never enough love or intimacy or conversation or coffee or whatever. That theme of scarcity runs throughout. And it's these patterns that are the real issues. And so it takes you to a greater level of understanding. And as you address, the cool thing is, as you address that pattern with your food, it affects the rest of your life. And as you address it in the rest of your life, it affects your relationship with food. So you become more and more consciously aware. And it's a cool thing.
It is. It is. I mean, I think that people forget, you know, a lot of people will talk about whether it be an eating disorder or disordered eating pattern. If you really delve into it, it can it can be your healing force for changing your life realistically
and
transforming it.
Yeah. And not just changing your life, but changing also, it affects people in your lives and situations. And one of the reasons why I have stayed in this field forever is that I love working with individuals who struggle with eating difficulties and get on the path of recovery, or actually that's not even a good word. I like the word transformation. These are the people the world has been waiting for. And I believe that with every fiber of my being, because typically individuals who struggle in this way, they're very emotionally sensitive and highly intuitive. That's not the problem. The problem is we live in a world that doesn't value that and doesn't teach us how to work with our intuition. And so what comes with this, once you kind of learn how to get a handle on it, is an immense amount of empathy and compassion, which is exactly what the world is needing right now. So for me, it's a great honor to be assisting in that process. And I've seen thousands totally, completely recover, clear this once they got down into the depths of what it was about for them.
Yeah, and that's the amazing part of your work and of this work in working with people heal, what I'd like to say, heal their relationship with their food. Because in that, they're healing their relationship with themselves and the greater world around them. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's such a gift.
It is.
And it's hard work. You know, sometimes it feels like crawling on cut glass on bare knees. But it's also, there's a lot of joy in the recovery process as well. So it's not just totally grueling and painful.
And it is work. And I'm glad that you you mentioned that, because so many people feel like, whether you know you have an eating disorder and you truly binge and purge, or you are in a pattern of emotional eating where you come home every night and you eat from 5 o'clock until the time you go to bed, and you know live in shame, and may not be in a recovery or a treatment program. It is work to change a pattern. It can be radically gratifying and enormously, you know, uplifting, but it is work. And I find that so often we don't give that enough credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's repetition that's required, and because we're working with bodies, right? And we're working with neural pathways in the brain, and what we know now, fortunately, is that, you know, we create new neural pathways for the day we die. But what that means is that we have to use repetition with our thoughts and with our behaviors to create new superhighways and prune out those that no longer work for us. But it's totally doable. And once you do it, and this is where I believe in full recovery, it's a done deal. It's sort of like a weed. If you just cut it off at the top, you'll say, okay, I'm going to white knuckle it, and I'm not going to eat these foods, and I'm going to go do this diet, and I'm never, ever, ever going to have Ben and Jerry's or whatever it is. If you do that, that's cutting the weed at the top.
Yeah.
And given the right circumstances, it's going to grow back. But if you can go down and find the root issues, what is this about for you? What are the feelings that you need to learn how to address differently? Once you learn how to do that, it's a done deal.
It is. And I love that you mentioned neural pathways because, you know, when I first got into this profession, and I'm sure it was similar when you did as well, you've been on it longer than I have. I know that there wasn't a lot of research on the neurobiology of our brain and neural pathways.
Oh, it's new.
It's And the beautiful part of it is, yeah, recovery really is possible. You really can change your relationship with your food because we know that the brain can change. Yes. We know that those superhighways can form and we can change the direction in which our thoughts affect our behaviors, affect our emotions. We know that it can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to tell clients in our treatment setting that, you know, yeah, this may be a nuisance doing it this way, but guess what? When you leave, you're taking your brain with you.
Yeah.
So let's get on it.
Right. This is yours to keep, and we're going to help you change it so you can keep it with you.
Right.
I love that. Can you, I also, you know, I know that the Eating in the Light of the Moon Cafe is a newer endeavor for you. I know it's not new, but can you tell us a little bit more about how you work with your ideas in the Eating in the Light of the Moon Cafe?
Yeah, so for years, you know, because I wrote Eating Light of the Moon 20 years ago, believe it or not. But for years, people were asking if I would do a workbook. And every single time I thought about a workbook, my heart sunk. It just seemed too boring to me. It didn't excite me. And then I got this idea of working with a friend of mine and colleague, Elizabeth Peterson. She's a dietitian. And she'd been running Eating Light of the Moon support groups. And she said, do you think we could do this online? And I went, wow, I have no idea, but let's try. And so we ended up creating, this was about 6-7 years ago, the Light of the Moon Cafe, where it's a combination of an interactive workbook, book club, a women's circle. So what it is, I had several 8-week modules where we take a chapter at a time, except for there are some new chapters that I wrote from Eating Light of the Moon. Mm-hmm. And then every single day for 8 weeks, there's an activity, whether like this week we're reading chapter 7 in Eating Light of the Moon. And then the next day there might be a poem. And then the next day would be an audio of me telling a story. And then maybe there'd be a drawing or writing activity. And then there'll be an audio of me sharing a metaphor. And so every day, and a playlist of songs to listen to that are inspiring. And so, and then there's a forum. And so every day people, you know, it doesn't matter where in the world you are, and we have people from all over the world at the cafe, you can go in and respond on the forum. And I respond to all comments and questions on the forum. And then we also have several live calls. So it's really, it's alive. It's very exciting for me. I get to see in real time the progress that people make in terms of getting to the deeper meaning of why they're struggling with food in the first place, and then finding the skills that they need in order to respond differently to these particular hungers. So I love it. It's just been a great joy for me.
It is such a great resource. I mean, I think it's amazing. I think your work is incredible, and you know, anything that stands true for 20 years definitely is a tried and true in my book. And I'm so glad that you've brought your book to life, so to speak, because that's how I look at the cafe. And thank you. You know, I want to thank you, Anita, for taking the time out today. I know every day is a busy day in your life, and I know that time is precious. So I so appreciate you coming on with me today and taking the time for my listeners, our listeners, to really get a sense of who you are, what your work is, and how they can access your resources. You can find more about Anita Johnson at www.anitajohnston.com or www.anitajohnston.com or www.lightofthemooncafe.com. Thank you so much, Anita, for coming on with us today. And we will share all those links on the podcast as well as on the www.wendyfrancis.com so that people can go ahead and link into your excellent resources and your amazing insightfulness. Thank you so much, Dr. Anita.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure to spend time with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I look forward to speaking with you soon. And thank you again for joining us for this special edition of Overcoming the Emotional Eating Podcast.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.